This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sahadev Sharma is on Twitter at Sahadev Sharma. Few cover the Cubs quite like he does. He joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hello, Sahadev. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful, guys. How are you? Good to have you guys back on the air together.
Yes, it's nice to be back out of the wilderness and back on these airwaves.
Yes, it's so nice.
correct me if I'm wrong, Sahadev, but Anthony Rizzo has had these late-season power droughts before. I want to say in 2016, we made much of his decision to use Matt Caesar's bat. He decided to go with a little lighter piece of lumber to get through the zone. Is this just something he does? Is it physical? Does his power stroke get a little tired?
Yeah, I'm not even sure if it's, being kind of tired throughout the season or if it's just random slumps. I looked into this during the road trip, and when Joe kind of talked about how his mechanics were off, just to see if he'd had such a long stretch, with such low ISO. And there was a 41-game stretch last year in the middle of the year. Remember, last year felt like it was an off year for him, and he just had this random stretch where he wasn't producing power, but he just does what he does and still gets on base, and he'll find a hole and drop a single here and there. But I think it's just a natural power drop here and there during the season. I don't think it could be a little bit about, being tired and just being out of his, and that leads to getting out of his mechanics. 2016 was obviously a random occurrence where he was exhausted, and we didn't hear much about that bat was actually weighed a little less than the one that he had been using all season long. So that was a little, I'm sure that helped him dropping the weight of his bat, and him being tired just allowed him to drive the ball again with a lighter bat.
He seems pretty damn tired of talking about it. I don't know if you guys have noticed that, but I've certainly noticed it on broadcasts, and when he's telling Kelly Kroll that all he needed to do was talk about it, that helped a bunch. I guess, to that degree, is that frustration, you think, endemic of the last couple of weeks of Cubs baseball or just his?
No, I think it's kind of just Rizzo doesn't like to break down his mechanics and stuff like that and really get into the nitty-gritty and overthink. A lot of these guys don't like to overthink when they're in a slump. So when you ask them questions about, why isn't this happening, they're just like, do we really need to talk about this? I'm trying not to think about it and trying to get back into a rhythm without overthinking things, and you asking me that question is going to make me overthink it type thing. And that's, I noticed it with Jason Hayward. I think that's part of what, when Castellanos made that quote yesterday about, basically essentially saying living in the now.
Yeah.
Almost all athletes in general are trying to almost trick themselves into forgetting the past, don't overthink the future, live in the now. And whatever way they go about that, whether it's Castellanos' It's Opening Day every day, or Rizzo kind of like, let's not talk about my mechanics in great detail outside of, when I'm looking at tape or doing my work. They all have their own way of going about it to make sure that they don't overthink things.
Jonathan Lucroy is obviously a professional catcher, to say the least. And as you've watched him play, we didn't know what we were getting. We didn't know how much recovery was going to be baked in here to what the expectations were. But what do you think about what you see of Lucroy as a Cub?
Yeah, it's hard to really know just yet. I'm curious to see. I'd like to see, by the end of or the middle of September, if there's any data as far as how he's catching, as far as framing and stuff like that. I know it's been terrible for a while now for him. Is it just, what are we seeing behind the plate? It's hard to really get a good grasp of that just eyeing it, right? Especially when I'm in the press box and I don't have that camera view of seeing how he's how he's catching the ball. But he's been better offensively than I think any of us expected. And this is what the Cubs kind of said. He kind of gets hot at this time of the year. And like you said, he's a professional at bat. He's a professional guy. He's been around for a while. I think, you know, I'm not seeing him drive the ball or do anything special. I'm just seeing him, you know, move the ball, which I guess is what this team has been looking for. And obviously he's a veteran behind the plate that kind of helps you he doesn't overcome the absence of Wilson Contreras, but it obviously makes you miss him less.
For those who want the numbers, he's slashing as a Cub 333, 417, and 381 in his 24 games. It's a weighted runs created plus of 108, which is above his career number of 103. He is outperforming his career offensive numbers.
Yeah, he looks perfectly fine. Like I said, you said 380-something slugging. So, he's not driving the ball, but really you don't need a ton of power right now. If Castellanos is going to do that, and if Rizzo's found his power stroke, you have that with much of the guys in the middle of the lineup, and it just makes a guy like Contreras eventually returning, you know, kind of gravy.
Talking Cubs with Sahat of Sharma. He covers the team each and every day. You follow him on Twitter, at Sahat of Sharma. I read the hell out of your Cole Hamels mechanics piece, and it got into the weeds and very dorky and very mechanical, which I love. I am a huge fan of that, and I don't want to do the whole mechanics conversation here, Sahat, but what were the basics of what you found, and did last night's start prove, disprove, or just kind of stay the same as far as his ongoing fix is concerned?
Yeah, it seems like there's just, you know, whenever a guy is pitching, and this is true of every single aspect of baseball, little things change throughout the season, little things change throughout the career. And I've talked to hitters about this. I've talked to pitchers about this. Sometimes it's something that you just ignore. You don't overthink it. But it sounds like little things have changed, especially with his release point. And why does the release point change? Well, it's because of where you start on the rubber. It's because of where you are at the top of your delivery, how your hands separate, all these little things that you don't even think about. Everyone just focuses on the release point because we have data for that, right? We can go and look up where a guy's release point is. But what are all the things leading up to that? What are the things going on after that? Where are they landing? Are they landing, you know, 2 inches further, 2 inches to the left? Whatever it is, all that stuff throws off things. And when they all add up to when there's a bunch of little things that add up, that leads to what we saw, you know, in Philadelphia and the start before that. And I'm not sure if he was perfect mechanically yesterday. His velocity is definitely not where he wants it to be, and I think that's why he couldn't get away with some of those high four-seamers that got driven for home runs. But other than that, the command seemed a lot better, and I think you could view that as, A, he took advantage of an offense that's just not that strong, and B, yeah, probably a step in the right direction, and hopefully that continues. And when he faces tougher offenses, when it's better competition, we'll see that not only a better, you know, performance, but also a slight tick in velocity. I'd like to see him sitting 91, 92, not topping out at 91, 92.
One of the cool things about baseball, the truths of variance, and variance shows up in the bullpen as much or more as anywhere else. When a guy like Rowan Wick, who's off the radar of most Cub fans, even ones who remain very knowledgeable about the team, when he shows up this time of year in a divisional race and starts doing what he's doing, and you start thinking about, well, remember when the White Sox won the World Series and nobody was thinking about Bobby Jenks when they had Shingo Takatsu, and they weren't really thinking about Dustin Hermanson, and they had three different closers and they won a World Series with whoever was the next guy who was getting the job done. That happens in baseball. Is that happening now with Rowan Wick?
It sure seems like it. I mean, at the very least, he's emerging as someone that Joe can trust. And yeah, I mean, variance, we talk about variance all the time, and it happens the most in the bullpen. This is where guys just pop up, and all of a sudden you see, you know, like if you're just someone that likes to look at the leaderboards, all of a sudden you'll look at a leaderboard of relievers and say, who is this guy? Who's this guy on the Yankees that suddenly popped up and he's dominating hitters? He's striking out 30% of batters. I mean, that happens every year where there's a handful of guys that you've never heard of. Wick kind of feels like that. Just watching him and watching the results, you see this guy's got something. He's got, and he's also not overwhelmed by the moment, right? That's something we can't measure, that we can't really, that you kind of have to watch the games and see the situation, see how he handles it, talk to the people around him, and you understand this guy doesn't seem like he's bothered by it. And that's, I think that's a big part of why Joe's starting to trust him. they made a point of there was a game in Milwaukee where he made a play, jumped off the mound, and threw to third base, got the lead runner instead of just trying to get the easy out. And that was a big moment for him in the eyes of the coaching staff. The coaching staff saw that someone that wasn't overwhelmed by the moment made the right play and got it done. Didn't screw up in any fashion there. And I think those little things give Joe confidence to put him out there. And you're right, he's kind of emerging as someone nobody had heard of at the beginning of the year that they kind of took a chance on and tweaked some things with. And he's kind of figured it out. And now he's a big part of this bullpen and essentially going to be what they needed Pedro Strop to be, right? Now you have Cishek, you have Kimbrel, you have Kinsler, and you have that other guy that Strop was supposed to be that probably, you know, in all likelihood, Strope isn't getting back to, at least not this year. It's going to be hard for him to get back into that role again.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Sahada. Can Strope be the guy Strope was supposed to be?
I just don't, you know, I don't want to rip Pedro Strope because of look at his history, right? Look at what he's done.
No doubt.
And he takes so much heat whenever he has one bad outing. But this year just doesn't look like he has it. I mean, there's no confidence in the fastball. Every single time he throws a fastball, he has no clue where it's going. I mean, that's basically what sunk the Phillies outing, right? He hit Rhys Hoskins with the only fastball he threw because he doesn't know where his fastball's going. And when he does have the velocity, that means he really has no clue where it's going because he's throwing it with, you know, he's just trying to get the velocity on there and not commanding it at all. I'm not going to write him off, but I wouldn't count on Pedro Strop being a big part of this bullpen. And I don't think Joe and anyone in that coaching staff is going to lean on Pedro Strop until he has a few outings where he shows us that, you know, he's back to his old self. We just haven't seen that yet.
Jason Heyward had a spectacular first sort of March and April. His May was his June was unbelievably productive, and then he started to drop off. Here is Jason Heyward as a leadoff hitter this year. He's batting 163. His on-base is 252. He is slugging 370. His weighted runs created plus is an anemic 59. He asked for patience from Joe Maddon. He was willing to do it. It seemed like the move made sense. How much patience is there going to be here? When is this experiment over?
Yeah, it's a fair question, and I think you have to lean on Joe probably needs to give him a little bit more time. He can't pull him right when this is probably the point where that patience runs out when you don't request patience, right? This would be about the logical point where it's like, all right, let's pull the plug on this. I'm not even sure who the logical choice to put back up there would be at this point right now. You know, Rizzo's starting to hit for power again. You don't just shove him back up to the top spot.
No, but right 252 on base is not cut.
No, it's definitely not. I would say this, in defense of Jason Heyward, when he's good, and we haven't seen him at his best outside of this year for longer periods of time, this is the first year as a Cub that we've seen this. But go back and look at his career when he has been good. This is kind of typical, where he's up and he's down, and it's really long hot streaks, really long cold streaks. It'll be 2-3 weeks. How long has he been in the leadoff spot? Has it been about 3 weeks, or has it been over a month now? I'm curious if it's how long it's been, and this is right around where he should, you know, kind of cut that cold streak off. If it lasts for another week, you know what? When September rolls around, rosters expand, you have more options for a leadoff guy. I say give it through the end of August, unless it's really costing you. And they're just, you know, I mean, it's not like leadoff had been a positive before Heyward went in there. And I agree with you, those numbers are not really acceptable, but they're not acceptable at any spot in the top five or six spots in the lineup. So they've got to figure it out. I say give them a little bit more time, mainly because there just isn't a logical replacement, and because he requested it. And you kind of have to trust a guy like him to just give him that extra time and see if he can get back on that hot streak, which is pretty typical of what he does throughout his career when he's right.
According to the best I can find, Zobrist's plan is to play in Double-A on Thursday, and then he's with the Iowa Cubs Friday and Saturday. I don't know that you and I should plan another trip to Des Moines to go watch these baseball games happen. Maybe you do have that plan. Is that what we know so far? Do we know anything further out on the Ben Zobrist issue?
No, it sounds like, you know, I think we know what we've always known, essentially, that expect him here September 1st unless there's something unexpected. And by that, I mean he just doesn't feel right. He doesn't feel like he can contribute. He doesn't feel like he's going to get in major league shape, whatever that is. Or if he's just if there's a setback of some sort as far as he gets injured. Those are the only two ways that I see him not being up by September 1st. I think it just this is all kind of gone according to their general plan. You know, give him some time, every few weekends, just kind of figure out, get him back in baseball shape and bring him back up when rosters expand. And it's going to be curious how they handle the 40-man roster overall. They have a few guys that they – I guess Zobrist is Zobrist is the only one that would have to be added to the 40-man, but there's going to be a lot of people added to this roster. It's going to be curious how Joe kind of uses guys and who emerges in September. We could, assuming the Cubs make the playoffs, we could see a lot of changes to what the regular lineup is and what the 25-man roster is for October. I'm not ready to predict that anybody, even the guys that are down in the minors right now that everyone's written off, that any of those guys made, that Joe has trust in all of them. So if someone emerges in September, we could see a very different 25-man roster than what we're seeing right now.
So how have the demotions of Albert Almora and David Bote reverberated with this team?
Honestly, it just seems like guys are like, we trust that there's about 35 guys in this organization that we trust to help the team. Essentially is the way it looks. They love Albert. They love David. They're big fans of them. They trust they can get it done when the moment arrives, but they also know that, hey, they need it every day at bat. And maybe this will be a good thing for them. Maybe they'll find a rhythm. Maybe they'll build some confidence with some results in AAA and come back and help the team in September. I think it's really as simple as that. I don't think anyone's angry about it or anyone's like, haha, they deserve that or anything like that. You know, this is a very close-knit clubhouse, especially with Albert. Albert's been there for a while. He was there on the World Series team. He's a quiet guy that works his butt off, and I think just showing up at AAA right away and saying he wanted to get there as quickly as possible and make sure the team wasn't short, I felt like that's typical Albert. That's just who he is. Whether he's going well or not, guys are going to have his back, and that's just part of who this team is and what Albert Almora represents.
Do you think Daniel Descalso gets a chance in what are going to be essentially, you mentioned, it's almost going to feel like open tryouts for the last four or five spots on this roster. Is he a possibility?
Yeah, I don't think you can count him out. This the organization believes in him. I know that clubhouse believes in him. We have not seen it with the Cubs outside of that 2 or 3 week stretch to start the season. But yeah, he's certainly someone that they're going to be watching in September. I'd assume he has to do a lot, right? Yeah. I mean, right now, it just doesn't – it would have to be a significant impact. But go around and ask guys. They all thought he was going to hit a lot better and come up with a big hit. Maybe that happens in September. Like I said, I wouldn't rule out anybody, and I wouldn't rule out the fact that this 25-man looks very different in October. But I also wouldn't just assume that Descalso figures it out, even though he has had a nice run at AAA. We'll see how much that helps. Just getting regular at-bats, kind of figuring out whatever was thrown off in his mechanics, because he was having issues. I mean, the ankle stuff was real in the sense that early on in the season when he got hurt, he tried to play through it, and it screwed up his mechanics. And he could not get right, and he could not figure things out. And the fact that he wasn't playing and getting regular playing time, which he didn't deserve, and he'll freely admit that, and everybody knows that, he just couldn't get right. And that's the thing that happens, and unfortunately it happened to that guy, and he took a lot of heat from the public for it, and deservedly so. He wasn't getting results.
Sahadev Sharma, thank you very much, as always.
All right, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.